Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this edition of Inside Scoop Live and Internet Voices Radio. This is one of many features presented to you by Reader Views. I'm your host, Gail Campbell. Hello, and thank you for tuning in. Today, I'm chatting with Maggie Lanois about her book, Cremator's Revenge. Ooh, I love that title. But first, I'd like to tell you a little bit about Maggie. She currently resides in New Jersey. Maggie is a published and accomplished writer of psychothrillers, having majored in psychology with an emphasis in deviant behavior and mass murderers. She is currently a member of the Red Hat Society, the National Organization of Sisters in Crime, SIN-C, Writers Guild, NJPA, Horror Writers Association, Mystery Writers Association, and the National Association of Writers. Maggie, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Good to have you with us.
Oh, glad to be here.
What an amazing set of accomplishments here and affiliations.
Well, thank you.
Listen, now I know that Cremator's Revenge, I understand, is your second novel, and it was published in about the year 2000, if I'm correct.
That's correct.
And so anyway, as we get underway here, would you tell the audience a little bit about the storyline of this novel?
Well, this particular book is about I can't call him a gentleman, a man who has a vendetta against street people who happen to get involved, you know, with his grandmother and ended up killing her. And she was the love of his life. And so he decided after he had a nervous breakdown and came out of the hospital that he was going to get even with society. And so he chooses people that he thinks aren't worth anything.
And he decides that all street people fall into that category, right?
Yes, of course.
But it also
has to do with people who are overweight, people that just don't measure up to what he thinks, you know, someone should be.
Ooh, he has this ideal of perfection that no one measures up to, right?
That's correct.
Okay. What inspired you to write this novel?
Well, I was working with the street people. In fact, I had gotten a review from somebody who absolutely loved the book, loved the characters, but did not believe that a reporter would live or hang out with streeters. But I did for a series of articles I was writing for a Florida newspaper that I worked for as a Stringer reporter. And I got to know most of their stories, and their stories were not what I expected. Some of them were there because they couldn't help it, and some of them were there because they chose to be there.
Right.
But then, being somebody who has to have, you know, mass murder in a book, I'm always trying to find the best way to kill somebody and get away with it. So what's the best way? No body, you know. No body means cremation, you know, on one sense. So I went down and started hanging out at the cemetery. There's only one in Daytona area that cremates bodies, and I started hanging out down there, and then I just kind of put everything together in Cremator's Revenge.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. Well, in your story, you have created this cast of street people. Tell us a little bit about how they touch lives, their own, each other's lives, as well as the life of this grandmother and this
murderer.
Yeah, there we go. This deviant murderer.
Yeah, really. Well, what happened is his grandmother was known for helping everybody. And she was the type that would take food to a friend that was sick or a church member. And so she was just a very kind old lady who had taken him in when his mother didn't want him and he was only a little boy. And she happened to pick three, you know, I guess you could call them streeters, which is the name I made up. And she fed them and the whole bit. And then they, you know, viciously attacked and the whole bit. And he found her when he got home.
Oh, God.
Well, the people that I had met while I was hanging out with them, the characters in the book are very, very strong. I've had people contact me and be upset because a certain person, a character in a book died, was killed. That really upset a lot of people. They wanted me to change that because they really liked that character. And the character that they're actually choosing are characters that are kind of real people. They're a conglomeration of real people that I got to know. And so the characters are very, very strong, and you're able to choose which one you like better than another.
Right, right. Well, and of course, the way your novel flows is such that much as we might not like for someone we like, even on the written page, to die, death is sort of a big part of life, isn't it?
Yes, especially their life.
Exactly.
They live on the wild side. Not that they are particularly wild, but their way of living is wild, and the people they hang out with, they don't know one from another. They do bump into one another. I mean, you'll find somebody that'll go to Miami Beach, South Beach, and they'll turn around and bump into some that they know from Daytona or from Jacksonville. They'll even meet some that are out of New York and other states, but there are a big influx of them in the warmer states because they don't have to worry about getting cold and this type of thing, although Daytona does get cold in the winter.
Right. Well, and as your story depicts, the area that they were in along the beach there were showers, public showers, and
yes,
and public barbecue facilities, and
yes,
so they could actually live quite nicely, couldn't they?
Yes, and a lot of them do live in homes that they all share.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they pile in and they share the expenses. But there's a lot of them, of course, like you'll read in the book, where they sleep in the cemetery. They use newspapers to keep warm. They sleep in boxes, you know, under a bush, you know,
mm-hmm,
wherever they just happen to, you know, lay down or fall down that particular night.
Right.
There are associations that will help them. But, like, if you go to the Red Cross or the Salvation Army, they have a limit of 2 nights. You're only allowed to stay there for 2 executive nights.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Or, no, not executive.
Consecutive.
That's it.
I was with you there.
Okay, good thing.
Well, now, and as we've already touched on, your book does take us through the lives of a community of street people.
Yes.
Otherwise known as homeless people.
Yes. And they normally will gather in group so that it's kind of the same group, just like in regular society, because there's two societies. There's that, you know, that society, and then there's the, what, quote, normal society. Unquote.
And if I might inject, even that society has its own set of judgments and
rules
and,
mm-hmm,
and segregation, for lack of a better word, you know.
Yes. Like, you're not supposed to steal from each other, although it happens constantly. They never take their shoes off, you know, because they'll be gone, you know, and stuff like that. So they're not supposed to do that, but people they don't know that live on the street will do it to somebody that they don't know.
Right.
But the one, so they kind of gather in groups so that they're kind of protected with the immediate people they hang out with, just like our friends. We feel more comfortable with our own friends,
mm-hmm,
than strangers, and they're the same way.
Of course, of course. Well, now, your book touches on several themes. Just to name a few, abandonment. This murderer was abandoned as a young boy.
Yes.
And even he, in his own way, became somewhat homeless after his grandmother was, I mean, he didn't lose his home, but that sense of abandonment was even more exaggerated for him. And, of course, you're dealing with the issue of homelessness. Oh, there's revenge and genuine curiosity. I saw it on the part of the young reporter, and of course murder,
and love. There's love. He falls in love.
Exactly. Of course.
And
love.
So I think it's got all the realms in it. You
it
know?
Does. It does. It has passion and shame, regret,
yes,
and betrayal, mistakes and love, hate and revenge, and so tell us a little bit about how you wove those into your plot.
Multi-sided? I don't know. I try to make it, you know, like I said, I try to make my characters real. And having been a psychology major, I'm always psychoanalyzing everybody I meet.
Mm-hmm.
And I try and take the best out of everybody so I can go around the worst.
Well, and the worst.
Yes, but you know, you try to go around the worst because you learn, if you really get to know someone, you learn their, you know, hard points, and you learn their points that you can step on them and you don't want to step on them. So, and it's the same way with the book. So mending all those things together, the story just came together by itself, which all my books do. I start out with a basic theme in my head, but I let it play. I never know how it's going to end. But I just kind of felt like, you know, one day I was just in a great mood, and I figured I'd let them fall in love, which I did. And then it began to really build because it was a mother and a daughter, but even though he was after the daughter. And so it just kind of all intertwined so that when he's brought into that group by accident, you know, it's like some of them sense that he's not right.
Okay, now you're talking about is not the murderer, is it?
Yes, I'm talking about him, the murderer.
Oh, you are.
Dennis.
I was thinking of another character that I thought you might be talking about.
Which one is that?
The one that actually turns out to be law enforcement and that winds up rescuing the young reporter who's gone undercover.
Don't tell that part. Yes, he's a police officer. No, they bring Dennis into their own group by accident. Only because he met Vietnam Joe in a bar. And they'll take to anybody. If they think they're a streeter, they'll take to anybody. And he had a good rapport with him, so he takes them to the home where they're all meeting that night.
Oh, Michael, he just has a field day with this group, doesn't he?
I'm sorry?
He just has a field day taking his revenge
out
on this
right
group.
Yes, he's right there smack in the middle of them, and he's the one that's killing them off, you know. So it just, not expecting this to happen because they're watching for him and they're looking for him. This one guy brings them right into the house, and some of them felt that, you know, something wasn't right, but they never placed him, you know, to be the one they were looking for.
Because it
comes down to actually a war between the street people and Dennis Stillman.
Who is the murderer? That's the name
of
the murderer's character.
Yes. Yes, it's not a mystery. I like to show both sides in most of my books. The side of the murderer and the side of the people after the murderer.
Well, I think, again, in my own personal opinion, that depicts real life.
Yes.
I am a believer that probably all of us possess the capacity to do anything that we abhor, given the right circumstances. It's just that most of us, hopefully, have found it within ourselves to steer clear of the provocations and the other types of influences that might cause us to act out in those ways. But now this guy really is, I mean, he has real psychological problems.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
Yes, he does.
That's a whole different problem.
He doesn't even remember the fact that two of the three men were caught that killed his grandmother. There was only one that managed to get away. But in his mind, it doesn't matter. If
they're all
not worthy of living, you know, why bother? Why should they live?
Right, if they're all.
So he's just, you know, I was going to initially call it the King of Cleanup.
Ooh.
But I didn't feel it would depict the story.
I like Cremator's Revenge. It's really gripping.
After I decided to go with cremations, it just kind of fell in there. And my son and I were sitting there one day, and we were throwing names around, and that's how we came up with Cremator's Revenge.
Oh, I think it's a great title, an absolutely great title.
Thank you. It's my favorite book. It really is my favorite book of all my books. I just like the way everything intertwined. And, of course, in my head, I see the people that I actually took the characters from.
Of course.
And it kind of brings back some nice memories.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, it sounds like in his mind, that community, everyone in that community was guilty by association.
Yes.
So.
Yes, in one way or another.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And the girl that's the reporter that finds herself in the middle of this war, just, again, it's an accident that she happens to be there at that particular time doing stories. So, you know, when I read that review by somebody, I went back and wrote on, I think it was Amazon, I went back and wrote, "You think so? You know, call me." You know, because he wrote that nobody would do that. Well, yes, I am. I'm crazy enough. I did do that. But at the time, I also owned a restaurant and fed them, and that's how I met them all.
Wow.
I would go on Thursday nights with my mother. We owned a restaurant at a harbor. And whatever we had left over, we took down there. And then one night, we had nothing left over, so we showed up with a complete ham dinner. And we served 150 of the streeters.
Wow.
And so I started talking to them, tape recorder and all, and got to know them all. And it started out to be a different kind of book. And I can't remember the name that was of the guy that was running for president back then. But I wanted him to back it up because that was his thing with street people and cleaning up the street people. And somebody stole the book.
Oh.
So, yeah, I sent it to him with, you know, what it basically would be about and how it would work and some of the characters. And they were all real. Those people were all real. And I never heard. And then all of a sudden a book came out and it couldn't have been closer.
Oh,
so I was really
wow.
angry, you know, so that killed the book. And then, you know, years later, you know, it came out. It came out in 2000 by myself. And then when I opened my own company, of course, I switched it over to my own company.
Mm-hmm. Well, and
so
just,
it came out again in 2002, I think.
That's just a little FYI for everyone listening who wants to write a book. Be careful who you choose to be your publisher. Check
yes.
them out
yes.
So that you don't lose the effort that you've put a lot of work into. So.
Oh, yes.
Well, who is, okay, now who are you targeting? Who's your target market? Who do you believe will be able to really enjoy reading your book?
Anyone over the age of 18. I've had some under 18 read it, to my horror, because the book is very explicit.
Yes.
But, and I've had people say to me, but, you know, it's too explicit. And I'm like, no, because their lives are explicit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not going to turn around and something happen to them and say, oh, gosh. You know, that's just not their style.
Right.
And
they're a product of their environment.
Yes, and the things that happen to them, unfortunately, happen to people every day. If anybody watches the many law shows that I watch, it's a common occurrence, which I'm sorry to say it is. So I got off the question.
We were talking about the target audience.
Yeah, so I think anybody who likes to think, anybody who enjoys strong characters or a twisting and turning. I don't like books that have a lot of the grass is green, the sky was blue, da-da-da-da. I like fast-moving, fast-paced books. I don't want to be bored by my book. And so I leave out the things that people know what the grass is green and the sky is blue and et cetera. I just move it along. I give them enough information to turn around and be able to picture what they want to picture.
Right.
And so anybody with any kind of intelligence, anybody who can read, will enjoy this book.
Well, I guarantee I think it'll be hard to put down until you've gotten to the end and you'll want to go from there.
Yeah, everybody hates the ending.
Yeah, well.
You know, I don't mean they hate the ending in the book. They
hate that it ended.
It came to an end.
More.
Yeah.
Maggie, tell us ultimately what you would like for the readers to understand by reading your novel.
What a wacko I am. You know, that there's books out there for sheer enjoyment. There's a lot of people who like to be scared and thrilled. And I have two daughter-in-laws that cannot read it. They couldn't get past the first chapter.
Uh-huh.
And that happens. There's people that just can't tolerate that kind of violence.
Right.
But then my other two daughters just eat it up. So thank God I have four of them, you know. But I think that, you know, it's a measure of sheer enjoyment. If you just like, you know, that type of a book, you like to be scared, you like a theme, you know, there's nothing worse than reading a book that's dull.
No, you're
and
right.
This book is anything but dull.
It sounds like it. And Maggie, we are just about out of time here, and as we wrap things up, would you please tell the audience where they can purchase your book?
Any bookstore. They can go to any bookstore, or they can go on abetterberight.com,
okay.
Which is our publishing site,
okay,
and
great.
You can order it there. But you can order it in any bookstore or
like
Amazon.
Great. Barnes & Noble. Fantastic. Yeah. And at this time, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us today, Maggie.
My pleasure.
Your book is gripping.
Thank you.
And I want to encourage everyone out there to go to the website that Maggie just mentioned, which is Better Be Right. And that's
A
Better Be Right. And that's
mm-hmm.
W-R-I-T-E, isn't it?
Yes.
Be, A Better B-E, Right, W-R-I-T-E, .com. Also, InsideScoopLive.com and ReaderViews.com. So we want you to look over the reviews and also know that this Internet radio segment will be posted to all of those websites. So I want to encourage everyone out there to take a look and a listen and consider purchasing this book for your own library or as a gift. Tis the season.
It's not good night reading.
Well, no, but anyway, Maggie, thank you again for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And audience, thank you for tuning in to this segment of Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Gail Campbell. Until the next time, bye.